I mean, you and I, we tend to wing it a lot when we record. It's like we're jazz musicians when it comes to podcasting.
Yeah, jazz musicians.
Or I guess in your case, that would be blues musician.
Well, I'm from Mississippi, so sure. I grew up in the, what is it? What do they call it? The triangle of Memphis, Nashville, and New Orleans. I may have just made that up. I'm not sure.
Welcome to Touchpoint, a podcast dedicated to discussions on digital marketing and digital patient engagement strategies for hospitals, healthcare systems, and physician practices. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into a variety of topics on the digital tools, solutions, strategies, and processes that are impacting our industry today. We hope to share a lot of great information and have fun along the way. And now, here are your hosts, Reed Smith and Chris Boyer.
And welcome to episode 77. As always, I am Reed Smith, joined by Chris Boyer. How's it going?
Pretty good, Reed. How are you today?
Doing good, doing good. Back for another episode after having Ahava on with us last week, which was a lot of fun. We're back to kind of regularly scheduled programming.
To just the two of us.
That's right.
Well, with an expert later on in the show, right?
Yep. We'll get to hear from Dr. Jason Wolf from the Barrel Institute. And so they've got a new study out. So we'll get to that here in a minute. But before we do, maybe a little love to one of our sponsors, Loyal. Today, patient expectations are the same as consumer expectations. They want it all from convenience to transparency.
And that's why from the moment a patient decides they need care, Loyal's intelligent healthcare specific platform is their trusted companion. It empowers their search and guides them along their online journey.
That's right. Loyal solutions amplify the feedback you're receiving and provide answers to the questions your patients are asking.
And because they partner with the nation's leading health systems, Loyal helps deliver a simply smarter digital patient experience. So do us a favor, go visit them online at loyalhealth.com and be sure to tell them that the Touchpoint podcast sent you. That's loyalhealth.com.
Well, speaking of experience, we're going to talk a little bit about patient experience today. And maybe, you know, we'll get into this idea of, you know, patient expectations. So, you know, we've talked about patient experience, which in my mind, and I don't know, maybe let's spend a second on this, but patient experience at least sounds to me like it's a reactive thing. We're measuring what is happening versus spending time thinking about what people are expecting. That seems a little more proactive to me. I don't know. Maybe that's not the right way to look at that, but at least that's the way it kind of sounds.
I think you're dead on. That's actually how you should look at that because, you know, people go into an experience with their expectations. In that experience, if you meet their expectations, then they have a good experience. And if you don't meet their expectations, you have a bad experience. But see, what we do is we just measure that episodic point of care. We are only now starting to get a little bit more sophisticated, starting to understand what all of these expectations are. That's why we talk a lot about consumerism.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think along those lines, and we've talked about this, but just again, to reiterate, we feel, Chris and I feel at least, that the patient experience, that continuum starts well before they ever show up at the hospital or the clinic or institute or, you know, whatever the brick and mortar location is that we're talking about. You know, we measure just that time period that they show up. So the expectation, though, is a little bit different. You know, patients expect to engage with us well before they show up, and they expect certain things to happen. Again, a lot of those things that we've talked about.
It's based on a number of things. It not only their past experiences with your organization, your hospital or health system, but it could also be based on experiences they have with other organizations and other industries. And again, that's why we're talking about consumerism, because quite frankly, people engage with other things in a consumeristic way much more than they do your hospital, or at least we hope they do, right? I mean, some people probably spend more time with in your hospitals, but you know, the average typical patient doesn't interact with you as much as they might interact with, you know, like Amazon or going to their local grocery store or whatever it may be.
People have been on the side of, I guess, putting forth an experience for their own consumers. And so they're used to using certain tools and don't understand why healthcare doesn't fall into those categories. So you have people that have used Eventbrite for example, for the kid, everything from like the kids' soccer team, you know, snack sign up thing to, you know, doing stuff for church, for example, or other volunteer based activities. You know, so they've used those tools. So they're like, I don't understand why I can't register or I can't pay this bill or I can't get this result, you know, delivered to me because they've got an experience that they're bringing to the table of how they've delivered against people's expectations, right? So, I mean, that's even a bigger swing, I guess.
And, you know, if I had a dime for every time someone said, well, my vet sends me text messages to remind me of when my dog needs to come in for its checkup or what have you. Mm-hmm. Why can't healthcare do that? I'd be a rich man because, you know, a lot of people even use that sort of like that interaction with your pet care as setting a standard for your healthcare for you yourself. And while I get it and I agree with that mindset, we in healthcare, we face challenges. Our hospitals, health systems face challenges getting us all the way there.
We do. And along those lines, I mean, you don't even have to go to healthcare. You can just, I mean, like getting a haircut. You know, I get a text message reminding me that my appointment's the next morning. I can, via text message, change that appointment, confirm, cancel, you know, all that kind of good stuff. Now, granted, I understand that's one person on the other end of that with one set of books, you know, that performs basically one service. I mean, I get some people color their hair, or do, you know, do different things that require different types of service. I don't color my hair for anybody that's interested. But that's the expectation. That's what people are used to, right? Or you get the text message that, you know, your cell phone bill is due, or that your credit card was used, or, you know, whatever it is, we're used to having those checks and balances in place, that convenience in place, and those types of things.
Recently here in Minneapolis, there was a conference that was done by Modern Healthcare called the Consumerism Symposium. And it was specifically for hospitals and health systems. And while I didn't go, there were some people that I know that were there, including the CEO of my own health system that I work for. I thought it might be good for us to maybe kind of look at that article and walk through it a little bit, because some of the things that were mentioned there, I think, are important. Maybe our listeners might be interested in hearing some of the points.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, again, we'll have links to this stuff in the show notes, specifically this Modern Healthcare article and a few other things that we're going to mention. So if you look in this article, I think the most telling thing about the whole piece, and for those that work outside of healthcare, maybe this doesn't sound that crazy, but people listening to this podcast will understand that. But one of the quotes in here, one of the main speakers at this particular event was the CEO at Venice Health System, Terry Shaw. He was talking about an experience he had, actually his wife, but of course that impacted him. And he says, and it's quoted in the article, "I pulled in every favor for two straight months before I could get this figured out," talking about just different things that were going on. Okay. The CEO of a major healthcare system, the most telling quote in here is that, you know, we're really bad at making it easy for people, is what he was saying.
So true.
That's the problem. We mm-hmm. we just don't make it easy. And you can, and somebody can say, well, make what easy? The answer is yes, all of it.
Not only the wait room time, spending 40 minutes in the waiting room to see a doctor, but everything in between. You know, they list out some of the things here. Confusing changes to that fill surprise bills, or appointment wait times that span weeks or even months. Every part of that process is complicated. We make it very, very hard on people.
Yeah. And so he was talking about, you know, that it was unacceptable for like the wait they had to have, you know, to see a certain specialist, for example, and talking about days, weeks, even months at times, you know, depending on where you are and what specialist. It says some health systems are eliminating waiting rooms. How's that? How? We're just going to stand in the hall? Or does that force us to get better with how we schedule and communicate with people online?
Very much so. They're looking at a lot of different ways. Like, first of all, that online or even like sort of a phone ahead, knowing that patients are coming their way, eliminating those wait times. There is a fair number of walk-in clinics, you know, urgent care centers where you could just go walk right in, walk right up to the counter, and then get triaged right back to the care setting.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have to say, I've been privy to some of that. What they usually do is they bring them back to the exam room and then the patient waits there.
Yeah. We've just changed where they wait. Which I'm not sure is really doing anything. I thought another interesting piece in here is that some apparently are waiving copays if the consumer did not have a good experience. Is this like Domino's? Like if you did 30 minutes, it's free or something?
My goodness, could you imagine? Now notice they're waiving copays, right? It's not that they're not going to charge the insurance.
Right, right. They're just writing off everything the insurance doesn't pay. That's interesting though. And like, how do you determine that?
We talked about this in an earlier episode, a lot of episodes ago. When do you measure experience? And if they're basing that on Prescani, that's way too late in the game. Are they taking some kind of poll of that person as they're walking out the door? Does that patient know that if they say they have a bad experience, that they'll waive the copay? I'm not sure how that would actually be applied, but I find it a valiant effort and I like the intent of that. I'm just not sure how that would be actually applied.
Yeah, I don't know, because a lot of places, obviously, you're paying the copay as you come in, not when you leave, right? And so I don't know. I guess they just refund it or something like that. Obviously, we've talked a lot about telemedicine from time to time. So obviously, a lot of people are turning to that. It says in here, setting up shop at old shopping malls to offer more convenient access points, and even working directly with employers, which I think this is a huge one. To streamline the process. So if you can treat and get people back to work quicker, that's obviously in the world of occupational medicine been the goal. Mm-hmm. But if you extend that to the other service lines, you know, working with those large employers in their wellness activities, number one, to prevent illness. So you talk about shots and vaccines and things like that. But actually to triage folks, even on site.
It could be really interesting. But one thing, as we're kind of going through all these, they mentioned other things like partnering with ride hailing companies like Uber or Lyft, mm-hmm. or even setting up like better ways to wayfind, even real-time tracking within hospital systems where the patients are at. I think all of these things are great. To me, as we go through this list, Reid, I get a sense these are all like, I'm not sure if we're painting a full patient experience system, right? That you're like trying to address one thing. We have long wait times, so we'll figure out how to eliminate wait rooms. Or where, you know, people are there a long time between care, maybe we'll implement telemedicine to address one particular measurement in patient satisfaction or patient experience. I'm not clear if anyone's doing it holistically.
I don't know. And I'd be curious, you know, especially if you think about some of the things that we're used to. It's like when you go to a restaurant and you have to wait, they give you the little thing that buzzes or whatever. Mm-hmm. A lot of restaurants now will just take your cell phone number and just like text you, you know, when they're ready for you, kind of a deal, when your table's ready.
Right.
And that's cool. But the problem with healthcare in that is that if I went in and it was like, super, let me have your cell phone number. We'll let you know when the physician's ready for you. That's fine, but like I don't feel well. Like I don't want to just go mill around the gift shop, right? Now, I'll be honest. If they had more of a spa-like experience or, you know, thing where I could go rest in a dark room or something, I'd be for that. I think the idea is, how do we look at some of this and try to put things in place that people, you know, again, when we're meeting those expectations versus just measuring the experience.
Another quote in here was from a gentleman I actually used to work with when I was at Northwell, Sven Gierlinger. And he was talking about, he used to work for Ritz-Carlton. At Ritz-Carlton, they do a really great job understanding your preferences, right? They get information like, oh, this person likes this kind of pillow. This person, you know, likes dark chocolate as opposed to milk chocolate on their pillows at night. And they build a profile of you that when you show up for that next day at a Ritz-Carlton, they're going to address your preferences, so to speak. And he said that what consumers do in between appointments is as important as what happens at the treatment. I mean, how do you start to capture that information?
Well, that's what we're doing, right? Isn't that the whole point of CRM? Yeah. When you go to the hospital, they know everything that you...
We'll pull in your credit card data. We'll pull in, you know, where you've been shopping. And
that's the thing, right? So, and I know people make this correlation to the hospitality world, specifically hotels, when we're talking about hospitals. It's a little still in my mind, a little apples and oranges. Can we pull some really great ideas? Absolutely. There's the book, you know, If Disney Ran Your Hospital, you know, there's all those types of things, right? Where you're on stage and you're doing this and you're doing that. And it's not that any of that stuff is bad in and of itself. It's not. But I think the idea, though, that when you're going to a Ritz-Carlton, you're probably in a pretty decent mood. You're on vacation. It may be a work trip, but still, you're staying at a Ritz-Carlton. So, like, how bad can it be? I don't care how nice the hospital is. We're always going to have to work against the idea that there's anxiety there and some level of discomfort, typically speaking. Taking labor and delivery out of the equation. Although there is still anxiety there.
It's not like patients are clamoring for dark chocolate versus milk chocolate on a hospital pillow, right? It's what they're looking for are a completely different set of expectations. And, you know, I think the main thrust of this is that we really have to focus much heavier on the patient and what those patient needs are for all of those different care settings. And when James Hereford, who's the CEO of Fairview, the health system I work for, he says, how do we appeal to a generation focused on immediacy and ease of use and create a system that's responsive to that? Hey, we want to take a moment to thank one of our sponsors, and that's our good friends at Binary Fountain.
You know, as a healthcare marketer, it's probably pretty obvious these days how much time you're spending on reviews, ratings relative to hospitals, physicians, all that kind of good stuff. You know, too many of those are going unanswered, and they're certainly not being analyzed.
This could be costing us new and current customers. It could be impacting our patient experience scores and potentially impacting our revenue. Luckily, our good friends at Binary Fountain have an online reputation management platform called Binary Health Analytics.
If you'd like to learn more or even schedule a demo, visit them online at binaryfountain.com. That's binaryfountain.com.
The immediacy piece is the hard one because we're used to it just working now, you know, whether it's text messaging, FaceTime, you know, all the things that we do are done in an instantaneous matter that, you know, you can go watch anything you want right now on YouTube, probably, or Netflix or Hulu or what, you know, any various platforms. And so anything that we want, we've got the ability to go to Amazon and buy. You know, whatever it is. You know, now we got to wait 2 days. You're like, oh, man, 2 days?
2 days to get my medical records. What the heck? That's so slow, right? I want them as I'm walking out the door. I want to know. I don't want to have that anxiety for 24 hours. Mm-hmm. I recently was in a meeting. We were talking about how fast we can deliver the lab results to patients. And they were very proud they got it to 2 days. And I was thinking, when you go to a dentist, they can hand you everything, all your information as you're walking out the door. And I get it. I mean, obviously, reading labs and, you know, and looking at imaging, it takes a while, right? And you want to make sure that they're reviewed and peer-reviewed, et cetera. But still, the expectations of us as patients are way skewed than what providers think, you know, where they should be. How do we make it about the patient? That's really the big point here. Later, when you do that interview, you get into a little study that was done by the Beryl Institute about patient experience. I thought maybe you and I could kind of talk through some key things that are coming out of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So here in a little bit, we'll get to hear from Dr. Jason Wolf, who's the president of the Beryl Institute. And they've recently, as in the last week, published what is called the Consumer Perspectives on Patient Experience 2018. It's a study that they did, and encourage you to go download it. Again, we'll have links in the show notes. But so it goes through a lot of components around the study, what they found, of course, everything from, you know, what was learned, and then it starts breaking down and defining the patient experience and those types of things. But yeah, a couple of things in here that I thought would be interesting to touch on. First and foremost was why is patient experience important?
And this is when they ask patients, why is patient experience important, right? So they ask them directly, why do you feel patient experience is important? Because every one of them, like they did a survey, like 6 out of 10 found that patient experience is extremely important. 3 in 10 believed that it's very important, and only less than 1 believed it was somewhat important.
Right.
So they asked them, why? And I think they broke it down into three different areas. The first section was around their health, that it's related to their health. My health and well-being are important to me. I want to know that my physical needs are being taken seriously. And, a good experience contributes to my healing and good healthcare outcomes. Those were like some of the top reasons why mm-hmm. patients believe patient experience is important.
I think it's interesting to see that last one there, or at least in that category, that individuals feel that the experience that they have does contribute, I guess, either in a positive or negative light to their healing and their outcome.
Kind of makes sense though, right? If you think about it, I mean, we've heard studies about that if you're approaching your care with a positive attitude that you're going to probably get healthier quicker. If they feel like the experience is good and they're collaborative with their doctors, I believe they'll be more compliant and ultimately it will lead to better outcomes. I know that this is their perception.
Mm-hmm. The second category, first one being about my health, the second one about how you treat me. So I want/deserve to be treated with respect. I want to be addressed as a person, not as a symptom, diagnosis, or disease. And finally, it will influence how I make healthcare decisions in the future. So again, why is patient experience important? Because it's going to influence, where they go in the future and how they make decisions. And then finally, the last category on why patient experience is important is having to do with being a customer or a consumer. About half the folks, felt like, that their time matters. I'm spending money on this. You would think that would be higher up the charts. Finally, they see themselves, about a third see themselves as a customer. And so people have certain expectations when it comes to being a customer of an organization or of a brand or of a product, right?
It almost tells me that consumerism, that patients don't really want to be label themselves as consumers, yet those consumeristic expectations are coming into it. I mean, they're third, right, in the categories, but they're still important to them, and it still does impact their overall patient experience. I think it's interesting. I don't know what it means. I see myself as a customer, though. I don't know what that exactly means.
I think people just have an expectation that if they are buying something or being a consumer of a good or service, experience is important, and I think that goes back to some of the I'm spending money on this and I'm choosing, in some cases, if it's an elective, obviously I'm choosing to use my time.
We could take that. Okay. So why is patient experience important to you? Or the question really was, why is having a good patient experience important to you? Mm-hmm. The next question, or one of the other follow-up questions in this study that was done, was they asked the what. When you think about having a good patient or family experience, how important are each of the following to you? What are the things that are important for their experience?
The highest one, and these were all pretty tightly grouped. It's not like there's mm-hmm. a big swing between, what folks feel is important here. The first one is, and the highest is, that my health ultimately improves. So that's what's most important. I get better. If the outcome is good, right?
Well, I would hope so. I mean, if you're going in for a care experience, I hope that's like top of mind to them. Mm-hmm. It's not like they want to say, I'm going to continue to be sick.
Next, that my care is delivered safely. Again, we talked about anxiety, or I mentioned anxiety earlier. That this is part of that. When they go in somewhere, they want to know, that they are going to be, cared after in a safe and respectful manner. They feel good about the process or the procedure that they're about to go through.
And safety could be many things, right? It could be not only the care that they deliver, but the cleanliness of the rooms, the attentiveness of the staff, feeling like they're safely being treated. The next one is that I achieve positive health outcomes. So not only that my health ultimately improves, which is the top one, but that they're going to achieve positive health outcomes. So that they're going to be actually healthier when they come through this.
Next, that I receive the appropriate level of care for my needs. I don't know that anybody feels like, wow, I was way too taken care of. I got way more than I. This is a perception a little bit probably. I'm not trying to devalue what people, you know, feel is important, but, you know, a lot of times it's, you know, as a layman, you're trying to discern, is the level of care I'm receiving appropriate? Well, that's hard sometimes, depending on the acuity of what you're going through or in for, if you will. But that's an interesting one in my mind, that the appropriate level of care is being provided.
That's right. And then the last kind of the segments of the top things that are extremely important to consumers is that my care is delivered with a focus on quality. And again, you know, a perception of what quality could be. In some cases, patients may not know the exact quality measures that we're talking about as providers or as doctors or nurses, but really that they feel that their perception is that care is delivered focusing on a quality experience or a quality outcome.
And again, those are in the extremely important category. So that's kind of how, when you go back and look at this study and look at the percentiles, you'll see that this is extremely important, percent extremely important. You know, again, not that some other things or even other things on this chart do not slot in and underneath and around and that kind of thing. So, but this thing is interesting to look at kind of that top box score across some of those.
One thing in the study that they say is that experience is ultimately the wrapper encompassing the integration of quality, safety, and service, and more to the consumer's expectations or the consumer's perception. So think about that. Experience is a wrapper encompassing quality, safety, and service.
Quality, safety, and service. I think some of those blend or overlap, obviously, to some degree. Mm-hmm. I think the level of quality sometimes, I mean, or maybe every time, depends on service and safety. It's hard for me to kind of divorce some of that in my mind.
The way I look at it, Reed, is like saying, if there is a good experience, does that mean that there's sort of a halo that the patient puts onto the experience that actually makes them think that their care treatment was of a higher quality? Mm-hmm. That may be, right? That perception may be there then.
Yeah, it may be. And if you look at another chart they've got here in their study, they do have a chart in here that's kind of interesting. And the question was, to what extent do you think / believe patient experience includes each of the following? And so they have quality and outcomes, 67%, safety, 68%. And then it drops down a little bit. And so you've got cost and service, both around 53, 54%. And then it drops down again, which I think is interesting. Patients and family engagement, only 43%, and employee engagement, 39%.
Interesting.
People are still shoving to the top box the idea that the most important thing is still the fact that I improve and get better and, you know, leave here better than I came in, right?
That's right.
You know, then kind of that next level is you know, well, how well is that delivered and what's it going to cost? You know, kind of a deal. People talk about, you know, how, you know, bedside manner, for example, physician bedside manner. And I've always said that's fine and good for the most part, but I don't particularly care what my surgeon's bedside manner is if it's more, you know, the more critical it becomes. So I'd rather have somebody that's the best in the world and is a horrible person because I know the outcome is going to be desired and I'm not trying to be friends with the guy.
It is interesting. And it's funny because when they say, you know, the study comes to the conclusion that quality, safety, and healthcare outcomes are seen as the most associated with experience and reinforces the idea shared that experience is first about health, even before it's how you treat me as a person. Yet, if you think about consumerism, they're focused on the experience that's not related to quality and safety. I think a part of this, not to belabor the study too much, but because we found it fascinating, but they even had some generational differences that they came up with, didn't they?
They looked at millennials, Gen X, and boomers, and they've got the highest and lowest ranked segments for each.
Before we get started, this is the part of our podcast where we really diss on millennials again, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we'll touch on the fact that I'm some sort of a hybrid. So I don't know where I fall on this. But anyway, Anyway, so again, they go through the kind of the top six and the bottom, I think it's six, five or six, pieces, highest and lowest ranked, right? Of the highest ranked, the top six were the same amongst millennials, Gen X, and boomers. They weren't necessarily in the same order. The highest ranked, I guess, for all three was that you were listened to. You know, it doesn't matter who you are or how old you are. People want to know that they're listened to. And I see this a lot, you know, as we do reputation management for hospitals, you get a lot of comments about this doctor and is a jerk. And really what they're saying is I don't feel like anybody took the time to really hear me out. Of the top ones, which I thought was kind of interesting, the biggest disparity was Gen X and boomers want to make sure that that they're communicated with in a way that they can understand. Now, for millennials, their second highest was a healthcare environment that is clean and comfortable.
Okay.
That's strange to me. I never would have guessed millennials would care about, I don't know, clean and comfortable. I guess it kind of depends on how you view that, but anyway.
But maybe, and we're speculating now on the minds of millennials, which is dangerous territory for us to go into. But maybe millennials, you know, are, because they're so exposed to a lot of information, they have the world at their fingertips through the internet, through social media, mm-hmm. you know, they're connected, that maybe they feel that communicating clearly is not necessarily that important. You just got to tell me what I have and how it's going to be treated, and I can go Google that later and learn all about it. Right. So to them, they'd rather be in a clean environment.
Yeah, maybe so. And that kind of aligns with another one on here that's a little bit of variable, which is give you confidence in their abilities. So boomers rated that high. You know, they want to know, they want to have confidence in what it is that you do. Not as important. I mean, it's still in that top six or seven, but it's not, you know, the third most important thing, for example. So anyway, there's some interesting things in there. And I don't know that we've thought about patient experience in a generational, you know, stratification, if you will, of what's important to different groups. You know, we've probably thought a little bit, you know, maybe some male, female, or service line based, you know, when we start talking about experience. But anyway, this is interesting. So, you know, definitely recommend that you go download this. And of course, Jason's interview coming up, we'll shed a little bit more light on the report itself.
I don't know about you, Reed. It sounds pretty exhausting, though. Not only do we have to understand all the different things that patients care about, now we have to segment them by different generations and provide different experiences. I mean, how are we even going to know that what we're doing is actually working? What about measurement? That's the age-old thing. It's like, do we have to now start to segment this all over, and what data do we use?
Yeah, I think that's interesting. And going back to that original article we looked at, the Modern Healthcare article that covered that the event there in the Twin Cities that we referenced earlier. You know, one of the last things they covered was the fact that, you know, satisfaction measures maybe outdated a little bit. A stat in here, only 23% measure relationship metrics like net promoter score, which gauges the customer loyalty and is often a more telling measure than hospital consumer assessment scores.
They may have listened to our earlier podcast about Yelp versus HCAHPS, right? Because we kind of talked about that there, didn't we?
Yeah, they stole this from us. I'm pretty sure. The first time we talked about it. No, they didn't. They didn't. So, you know, we talk about, and again, if you haven't listened to that one, I thought that was a really interesting episode. We had BG Porter from the Studer Group on, and we talked about the idea that, you know, a CAHPS survey really has to do with consistency of care, consistency measure, you know, how, you know, likely, most often, you know, how likely is this thing going to happen again this way? Whereas, like, you know, Yelp and Facebook and Google and, you know, those rating review sites, it's more of a succinct view into, you know, experience, which I think is kind of interesting. And I think that's what they're talking about, this whole idea of this net promoter score, which I think is an interesting concept.
It circles around to the fact that everyone at your health system potentially can contribute to patient experience. It could provide insight and measurement to patient experience, right? From digital people like ourselves, because we talked about the digital front door as being, you know, a big thing that we focus in on and making sure that the online experience is important to the nursing staff, to the clinical staff, to the analytics team that's on the back end. Everybody can provide an insight into that overall patient experience. And I think where we used to say everyone's a marketer, I think now we could say everyone is part of the patient experience team. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think there's any way you can avoid it. Everything that we do, especially in marketing communications, is very much driven by expectations measured against experience.
Hey, Chris, before we go too much further, jump into this next segment of the podcast, I did want to mention and thank one of our sponsors, Influence Health. You know, they've got a consumer experience platform that covers several things. And correct me if I'm wrong, but we've talked about content management systems on this podcast.
Yeah, we did.
What about CRMs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we covered CRMs for sure.
And then obviously each and every week we talk about digital marketing. So digital marketing systems, you know, in one way, shape or form have probably been covered, right?
That's right. Digital marketing systems. And I would say that we even talk about it in a way of that overall digital consumer experience.
Well, there you go. I would recommend for anybody interested in one of those topics or anything else, they've also got some complimentary solutions on their website. But head over to their website, take a look at what they've got and what they're offering relative to CMS, CRM, digital marketing systems, kind of how all that is woven together in what they call their consumer experience platform. Find your way over to influencehealth.com.
Touch, counterpoint. There are two sides to every story. Ready, fight!
All right, we're back with Touch, counterpoint. And today, talking about experience and patient experience, some of the things that we talked about in that last or the first part of the podcast had to do with generational differences and the way some of that came through in the Barrel Institute's report or study. And so I think let's argue or talk a little bit about the idea that, you know, should we create experiences based on generational preferences, or should there just be an experience as a whole?
I think that if we're doing patient experience the right way, we definitely have to embrace the generational aspect of this, and we have to start shifting and developing patient experiences addressed to the three major generations that are out there: the millennials, the Gen Xers, the boomers. Otherwise, we might not resonate with the right people. So I think, yeah, we should have three different experiences and three different experience measures that we're looking at.
So does this mean we have to put millennials on our committees? Can't do that. That's almost impossible. Like, how are we gonna? We're not even good at creating one experience. How are we gonna create three different generational influenced experiences? And how do we know how to deploy those in those different ways? I mean, sure, you can roll out three different ways to do X, Y, or Z online, and that's cool or whatever. But like, especially in person and in post, how in the world are we going to do that? Like, that doesn't even make sense.
Well, you kind of glossed over the fact that online is a great way to begin that experience. Because if you think about it, millennials and Gen Xers, they tend to begin their care experience online. And I think that you're underestimating the value of how online can play into that. So you could start to develop online experiences to allow millennials to text with their doctors, or maybe they don't even probably even loyal with a doctor. They just need to get care through virtual care centers or what have you. Of course, you know, the boomers and the Gen Xers are a little bit more traditional in that nature. That study showed it, right? They want to be able to be listened to and communicated clearly. But millennials, they only care for, you know, healthy environments. They have different set of experiences, and they frankly are starting their care experience in different ways. And we could certainly shift that experience at that point online.
So let me get this straight. I visit the website and this thing pops up and it's like, how old are you? And I like, I choose one. And if I'm a millennial, the chat bot then appears. But if I'm Gen X, it's a phone number. And if it's a boomer, then it asks me for my fax number. Or like, how does that work? Now we're just creating this disparate experiences. And now we got to keep people on our patient experience teams that like understand these different, I don't know. This just doesn't make sense. I just think we've got to boil it down and try to drive people through the experience, you know, based on what we're seeing and what we're measuring is the way that people want to connect with us.
But based on what we're seeing and what we're measuring, we just talked about that, that's like a short-sighted way to measure our experience. I get it that it's hard to do, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't try for it. We should try for it. And if you don't have people on your patient experience team that understands the millennial patient as opposed to the Gen X patient and their differences in the way they're going to consume care, then I would suggest you maybe start to expand your patient experience team to include those people.
Oh, man. Now we got to find somebody that knows how to use the dot matrix printer and typewriters and like, you know, the...
Yeah, to appeal to those hipsters, millennials.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. As a matter of fact, the other day, somebody asked me if they could, if there was still a way to send a telegraph. For why? Why would we even need to know? Like, what are you trying to send a telegraph to somebody? Anyway, it doesn't make any sense. We're very quickly, it makes no sense to create an experience for, you know, ways that, you know, are not beneficial.
Okay, how's this for a compromise then? Why don't we start to develop a way that through the patient experience, we could start to glean what their preferences are? Because, you know, this is me kind of walking to the middle. I'm a Gen Xer that probably reacts to healthcare a little bit more like the millennials do. You know, it's really based on my preferences, not my age, but what I prefer to do. Maybe I do prefer to have Snapchat as a way to talk to my doctor, or maybe I do prefer to have a fax of my pharmacy refill sent to me. But basically, how about we start to shift our experience so we can actually understand the preferences and start to try to communicate to the patient with that, with those preferences? What do you think?
Yeah, that's workable. I'll buy into that. No, so yes. I mean, I think ultimately, just like advertising, the more granular you can be, the more specific the communication or touch point, no pun intended, can be with someone, the more they feel valued and part of the process. And then again, that goes back to that idea of, you know, they want to be listened to, they want to be heard, you know, that type thing. And that they're, you know, want to be treated with respect. And yeah,
and they want a clean environment.
Yeah, clean environment. There you go. All right, we're here with Ask the Expert portion of the podcast, and today I am very fortunate and lucky to be joined by Jason Wolf, who's the president of the Barrel Institute and also the founding editor of the Patient Experience Journal. Jason, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be with you today. I really appreciate the chance to be with you.
For those that are not familiar maybe with the Barrel Institute or you in particular, and then certainly the Patient Experience Journal, maybe give everybody just a little bit of flavor of what you guys do.
I am a trained diplomat, turned healthcare leader, community builder in the Barrel Institute. And so I brought a kind of an interesting inside out perspective into healthcare and spent a number of years inside hospital system before realizing, I think, an opportunity to have a broader conversation on the human experience in healthcare and really linking the needs of those that are receiving care to those that participate in the delivery of care or supporting that delivery of care. And that really is the culmination of that was the Barrel Institute as a global community of practice. So we serve really as a hybrid of an association and a think tank that comes together in terms of creating connections, expanding research and really supporting global networking on sharing of the proven practices that can ultimately impact the healthcare experience for people around the world. And we've been very fortunate to really build a vibrant community now, over 55,000 people in 70 countries in the Barrel Institute community.
Wow.
In conversation around this work. And through our outlet on the academic side and through you know, our peer-reviewed journal, our academic journal, Patient Experience Journal, if you can believe it or not, is read in over 200 countries and territories. downloaded roughly 9,000 times a month. So there is clearly a thirst for this conversation and a desire to contribute to the impact of the human experience in healthcare, as it ties to both our ability to practice good healthcare and drive the best outcomes.
Here just recently, just in these couple of days even, you guys have published a study, the 2018 Patient Experience Customer or Consumer Study. What kind of led you guys down the path of doing this?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting because we, I think, are good natured, good hearted souls in healthcare that are trying to do the best for those that are on the receiving end of the healthcare system. But in our greatest of interest, sometimes we aren't always the best listeners to what those receiving care have to say. And really the reality, even for us in the Braille Institute world, in having this conversation around patient experience on the human experience in healthcare, was the one thing that was missing was what are consumers saying is important to them? And in a way, we sort of thought, hey, this is a little risky. I mean, what if consumers of care, the literally the person on the street that you pass by, you know, as you're walking to the store, what do they think? Do they even think experience matters to them? Or they just want to go in, get better, and go get out? And so we wanted to find out what the typical consumer of healthcare was thinking would be important to them. And so we felt it was important to do a very rigorous investigation. And so we created a very formal study. We looked for a pool of 2,000 respondents across 5 countries to share their perspectives, both to be able to look at national potential issues, but also transnational issues, and determine similarities and distinctions, but also understand what people that don't live in healthcare on a regular basis say about what's most important to them.
Through the course of this, anything jump out or surprise you?
Well, I mean, a couple things I think that have surprised folks as we've begun conversations about it. First and foremost, I don't think it's surprising, but it was reaffirming to hear that, you know, in 60% of the cases, consumers believed that the experience they had was extremely important. So that was first reinforced by the conversation, which I thought was, you know, obviously a grounding component of this exploration. But when we began to ask why it was important, what was really telling was it wasn't about all the intricacies or amenities. It was about individuals' health. And what people really said was, first and foremost, what's important to me about the experience that I have is my health, that I have good outcomes, and that they believed patient experience drives good outcomes for them. You know, then it's about how they're treated as an individual. And only downstream is it all the kind of customer centric things we might think around cost or other elements.
I would assume the level of acuity or, you know, chronicness of the condition or their disease potentially plays into some of that, right? Because you would assume if it's an episodic thing, then maybe convenience takes over, or is that not necessarily true?
Above all other responses, when we asked people why they believed patient experience was important to them, they said, because my health and well-being are important to me. And I think that's across our consumer pool. So it's not, I think that there is a fundamental recognition that I engage in healthcare because my health and well-being are important. And I think it was interesting that it's not just about health per se in terms of the episodic care you identified, but really that there's a broader identification that my overall well-being is important to me and that, you know, good health outcomes do matter. I think to your point, further up the acuity scale in terms of how serious someone's illness are, clearly they want higher clinical functions and greater expertise. But at the same time, it doesn't diminish their desire for the other things that they identify as important. And it was really interesting in the data. I mean, to your point, when we asked people to look at all of these various factors that they could identify as important to them, and we really bucketed them in sort of 3 major areas, sort of around the people components, process components, and sort of the physical environment or place components. The things that bubbled up to the top, in fact, the top 5 things identified as most important were all related to their personal interactions. And again, I think that's across level of acuity to say, hey, you know, the top thing is I want people to listen to me. And you can see where that would matter in as much as an annual physical appointment in your physician practice space to a highly critical care encounter where someone's on potentially those last days of life or at the risk of losing their life, that they still want to be listened to, that the second thing they said was communicate clearly in a way I can understand, and that I want to be treated with some courtesy and respect. I mean, right after that, then it gets to your point, around giving confidence in abilities. So that capacity is for me to know that you're good at what you do. Because what came out of this is an expectation, I think, implicitly was the expectation that you're going to provide me good, safe, quality care. That's your job. You know, we don't get on airplanes and fly around and celebrate the fact that you got me there safely. We expect that we got on the plane because you were going to get me there safely. We celebrate the fact that you treated me with dignity and respect and everything else worked out okay. Mm-hmm. And so I think in some ways the consumers are pushing us to not just celebrate how safe we are in healthcare because that's what they expect. And yes, we have to work on that consistently and vigorously every day, but they have bigger expectations of the healthcare system than simply the things that are at the base of our core deliverables, in essence.
How does technology fit into all of this? I mean, what we're seeing, especially from a consumerism standpoint, we like to talk about, you know, digital transformation and all these things. You have voice first devices and self-driving cars and all these. So how is technology ultimately going to play into the idea of experience for the patient or the consumer?
Yeah, what I really think is that I think actually this study even sort of clarifies greater opportunity for where technology can have the greatest impact in healthcare. I mean, clearly outside of some of the clinical paths and expediting the ability to do analytics and a lot of the AI work in terms of decision-based care, but the reality of creating technology infrastructure for consumers that help them feel more connected to their own care, that they feel like they're being communicated to more effectively, they have access to information that they need, that they feel confident in the kind of care they're receiving. And then even downstream for us, it was that the capacity to schedule with ease, you know, the ability to access discharge information. People, I think there's a huge opportunity within the technology space to streamline that. A lot of information that would previously have been lost in a lot of the chaos of a care encounter could really be elevated in a way that solidifies what's most important to consumers. And I think that's a huge opportunity when we begin to focus on it from that lens.
But I'm still hearing maybe that, and ultimately, this is all complementary to that core engagement or interaction that they've had at some point. You know, these things are not necessarily, even though telemedicine is getting better and better, it's still supplemental to the idea of how we want to engage and interact in our healthcare.
Yeah, I mean, let's think about where Amazon might go, for instance, in Alexa or whoever the doctor voice will be when that shows up, right? So there's going to be Alexa, your main host, and then Dr. Shirley, who knows, right? And I mean, even that device, even the way they can build that, if it hits on the main consumer needs, I think you're going to see that to be a vibrant. I mean, Alexa listens to you, right? That's the first thing consumers are asking for. In some ways, she listens to you and communicates clearly in a way you can understand. I mean, she's doing the two things that consumers of healthcare ask for today. So it's not presupposed that it has to be a personal human interaction in some cases. If someone's looking for health answers, I think there are many ways to build the infrastructure to deliver on consumer needs that aren't sort of precipitated on the traditional healthcare encounter either. And that's where I think there's some real interesting opportunities as we continue to evolve the healthcare conversation.
The patient experience as defined by individuals, in this case, 2,000 respondents, is probably somewhat different for all of them. You know, you're bubbling up some themes and things like that. And so I think for those, you know, a lot of folks that listen to this podcast are marketing and communications professionals, you know, where do they fit in this equation as far as owning or leading this charge within their organization, or how can they best participate or join this conversation with their organizations?
Yeah, I think that's a critical question and one that actually was elevated by the study as well. I mean, I think at the end of the day, what these consumers told us was that whether they had a negative or a positive experience, the number one thing that they were going to do was tell someone else. So sort of when we begin to look at the implications of experience, when we gave them a list of things, right? And 76% of people said they're going to talk about a negative experience. 70% said they were going to talk about a positive experience. In both cases, sort of the upper ranked thing. So the stories that we create in our healthcare encounters, which are so critical and being driven in some ways by sort of our marketing, our branding, the touch points that we create, the way we encourage our people in healthcare to engage in telling the narrative of what kind of organization we want the market to know us to be is significant, because the first thing, as I said, people are going to tell are the stories about you. Only then are they going to say, well, if it's good, I'm going to stay. And if it's bad, I'm going to leave. And that's what we really found from the study. So even before choosing to stay or leave, I'm going to tell other people, good or bad, what you did. And what was, I think, the sort of the finale of the study that we didn't anticipate, you know, back to your earlier question, was when we asked people, how are you going to make your healthcare decisions in the future? First, they said patient experience will be extremely important to us in a majority of cases. But more so when we ask them what's going to drive your healthcare decision-making, they say first and foremost, those recommendations of families or friends, the stories they're told. So if we begin to connect the dots from a marketing standpoint, in healthcare, we're creating stories every day. The experience we create for people, the clinical quality, the service excellence, the ability to create a human experience is going to generate the story that others tell. And that story that others tell is going to be how people make their healthcare choices. It's not the rankings, what they told us in only 1 in 4 cases, rankings or online ratings or comments online, those sorts of things, which we still focus on and are important, are presupposed by the fact that people are out there telling stories about us each and every day. And so I think as we begin to think about the implications for this research, it's about how do we create and what is that story that healthcare organizations want others to tell about them? And that story that's told is going to be what drives healthcare decisions. That's going to drive our capacity to be vibrant, effective, and sustaining healthcare organizations and to create continued positive experiences over time.
So this is the 2018 patient experience consumer study. He is Dr. Jason Wolf. So if folks want to download this and maybe even connect with you online, what's the best way to do this? How can they find you guys?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, all the information and the new paper is available on the Barrel Institute website. It's thebarrelinstitute.org. And there's actually under our resources an entire landing page for the consumer study where you can not only listen to some webinars and other discussions on the topic, but the full paper will be available there as well, open to the community for download. And hope people will be able to take advantage of digging into that and seeing how it can affect their own practices.
Man, that's awesome. That's awesome. And we'll have links to all that in the show notes, including your Twitter account and how they can download the paper and all that kind of good stuff. So thanks for taking a few minutes with us, and look forward to having you back on soon.
Yeah, looks forward to it again. Thanks so much for the chance to be with you all today, and I look forward to the continued conversation.
All right, we're coming to the end now of episode 77 about the patient experience. It seems to be a topic we come back to quite often, Reed, and I think it's okay. It's very important. I believe that, you know, there's a lot of great ideas and insights, and that the study from the Barrel Institute and your interview with Dr. Jason Wolf from the Barrel Institute really had some good thought starters and good ideas in there. So I hope people found this episode as interesting as I did.
You know, this is a topic that could be a podcast in and of itself. I mean, a whole show that week after week just talks about pure experience and things like that. Maybe it will be at some point, but for now, we'll continue to circle back on it probably on a pretty regular basis, if not weekly, honestly. So in episode 77, I didn't think about this. That was the year I was born. So it's a good number.
There you go. Great number. So Reed, this is the time where we talk about what's happening, what's coming up.
Yep.
What's happening with you?
Well, as you listen to this or thereabout, I'm at the Texas Hospital Association's governance conference. For those that are listening that might be interested, I'm actually doing a webinar Wednesday, August the 15th. So a little less than a month from today. Doing it over with our fine friends over at Medicom Health. And so you'll see more about that coming out where you can RSVP for that free webinar. And we're doing that. I'm doing it on gaining control of online patient feedback. So very timely. Why claiming and correcting listings online is so important, how to best monitor and respond to online reviews, and how to gain insight from those reviews that you can use to impact hospital operations. So again, if you follow me on Twitter, LinkedIn, something like that, I'm sure I'll be posting some links to it. Follow the fine folks over at Medicom as well.
That sounds really interesting. I'll be sure to do that.
Anything fun going on in your world?
Well, coming up, I'm going to be at the Atlas Conference. Going to be talking at the Atlas Conference, being part of the panel. We'll put some links in the show notes around that. And HCIC, you and I are going to be there coming up. But that's a little bit further out, you know. Between now and then, it's a lot of spending time here at the house and maybe even going on vacation up north. So nothing that, you know, any of our listeners could participate in.
Well, unless they want to build a deck, they could come over.
See the last episode for that reference.
That's right. That's right. All right. Well, cool. Before we get out of here, maybe a couple of recommendations. What do you have on your mind today?
Well, I have a great recommendation, Reed. It is the summertime and the heat of the summer sometimes. And at night, it gets really nice here in Minneapolis. And so my recommendation is to, on a hot summer evening, sit out on the porch with maybe a glass of iced tea or lemonade or even just water and just enjoy the fact that it's summertime, it's nighttime, and just enjoy sitting on the porch.
Lame.
It's that simple.
Lame.
Why is that lame? That's simple.
No, that's great. That's really good. It's just way too hot to do that in Texas.
Well, maybe you have a closed-in porch with a fan or something like that. A large window, you know,
that you can look out at.
Exactly. Or just look out the window. But the point is, you know, the other night we were sitting there, we were listening to the crickets and enjoying the fact that it's summertime.
Very cool. I am going to recommend a book that I'm not sure how easy this is to find, to be perfectly honest. I'm assuming you could find this somewhere. When I was in college at Mississippi College, I took sculpture. One of the most interesting classes I've ever taken. It was actually very hard. So people that know me know that I like to do art. And I'm an artist of some extent. Anyway, the guy that taught that class has taught it for years and years and years, a guy named Samuel M. Gore. And so anyway, there's a book that's been put out of him, and it's called Samuel M. Gore, Blessed with Tired Hands. And it's a really cool book, and it's a great coffee table book, a lot of really neat pictures of his art, sculptures and paintings through the years, some stories behind them. It's just a really interesting book about an interesting man. So that is my recommendation. Samuel M. Gore, Blessed with Tired Hands. And if I can find a link to it, I'll put it in the show notes. I know you can buy it, obviously, but we'll track it down and put it in the show notes.
That sounds really interesting. Cool. What a great recommendation, Reed. I like how you and I are sometimes at polar opposites of our recommendations.
Yep. Well, very cool. Well, another great episode, another great week. Thank you so much for all the feedback online. We love hearing from folks. Love feedback about the episodes, about the topics, about the guests, future topics, which many of you have passed in to us and are on the docket. Don't worry, we will be covering those in weeks to come. So please keep sending those our way. We're 77 episodes in. And Chris and I'm not sure, are smart enough to come up with 77 more. So we probably need some help along the way. so that would be super great. And look forward to seeing everybody in the weeks and months to come. So for Chris, I'm Reed, and we'll see you next week. This has been a Touchpoint Media production. To learn more about this show and others like it, please visit us online at touchpoint.health.